This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Afternoon, at the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rod.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanet.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right. Welcome back. Hope you're having a nice little Monday. It's your sports bros, Rob and Sook.
Solid.
I'm Rob. Big Sook's right over there.
Right. Oh, dude.
This is the first day in, let's see,
12 years?
12, 13 years. Well, yeah, 12 or 13 years. That we do not have a leader. We are coming to you leaderless.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I think Jeff was here closer to 16.
He said 2008, I thought, right?
Well, I thought it was, he said two different stints, though. I think 17 years total over two stints.
Oh, okay.
I think.
I thought he was here longer than that on this. Hey, how about this?
No, he said he came back in 2008 because we started in 2005, you and I.
Yeah.
So it was about three. So 17 years.
Well, he'll text us to let us know
for the second time, and then
yeah, he's probably listening right now. Happy
drunk
retirement,
as
you old
a skunk.
Bastard! Yeah, getting drunk, and yeah, it does feel a little. It feels a little loose here. That
do
we're
we
out.
Sound leaderless today?
I don't know about you. I feel refreshed that I'm out from underneath that tyrant.
Ah, here he is. He's
the
in.
Heavy-handed Jeff Austin.
17, yeah, because 2008,
yeah,
and then 19 all told,
yeah,
with that first stint.
It was like when they kill the Wicked Witch. Like we have that parade out in Oz, and like we're burning statues of him out in the parking lot. It's been great.
What if he comes crawling back?
Retirement doesn't work.
He's like, guys, I can't do it. I'm back.
I don't think Jeff's gonna have that problem.
Yeah, I don't either.
Jeff's been checked out for months. What are you talking about? He's ready to be done. The house has already been sold. He's on his way to North Carolina right now. He'll be at a Durham Bulls game in a week.
Odyssey will do that to you.
Yeah, he'll grind you down.
All right. Well, coming up this hour, we have to get to some Chauncey Billups talk as he is returning as the head coach of your Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah, we have the...
It's just, actually pretty neat.
Basically, they're just running it back. Run it back! Everybody gets a deal.
Well, I thought that, you know, because the Suns fired their coach today, which we'll hear about in a moment.
Yeah.
But I thought maybe he'd go there or Denver.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like up until a couple weeks ago, that was kind of the plan. Hence, we didn't get the move at the same time the Cronin move happened, but they were working with the representatives, and lo and behold, John's going to be here for a couple more years.
So we'll get to that this hour. Maybe a little more Masters talk. Can we ever have enough Masters talk?
Dude, that Masters was so good.
It was sweet.
Dude, it was just drunk the entire round.
It was wild.
It was just insane.
It was a roller coaster, or as they say, a Rory coaster.
It's insane. If there was a t-shirt with Rory Coaster across the front of it, just that, like a green shirt that said Rory Coaster, I would buy that shirt.
And coming up tonight in the club, was White Lotus really Lord of the Flies behind the scenes? Did you read any of that
stuff? I did. Well, and now the one guy with the big teeth is emotionally damaged from Saturday Night Live, and you know, it's
wait, what?
Yeah,
did they make fun of her teeth?
And she apparently like had a huge meltdown over it. She was crying on the street.
Was that from their long the White POTUS skit?
No, I think it was on Weekend Update.
Oh, okay. I know SNL did a big 5-minute long sketch where they were
With Trump.
Yeah, conflating the Trump presidency and the White Lotus.
I think she's kind of hot.
Well, apparently she does not like jokes.
Well, she's probably pretty. I mean, look, those chiclets are.
Yeah, but
she has to know that.
They're pretty prominent.
If that's your signature thing, and they and like you kind of get hired, and they talk about it on the show, it's Saturday Night Live. Like they're going to poke fun at it, but she's not happy about it.
So that's in the club right now. The Hot 5 at 5.
Oh, hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, darling, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
That's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 with Isaac and Sue. Brought to you on The Fan by Victorico's Mexican Food. Discover Victorico's new savory menu items. Order in-store, online, or get it delivered straight to your door at victorico's.com. Number 5.
Ah, yes. Number 5. Paige Beckers, indeed the #1 pick in the WNBA draft. She goes to the Dallas Wings.
Who knew that they were the Dallas Wings? Anybody?
Not me.
Anybody?
That was actually my first thought was, wait, they call them the Wings?
Only because former Duck Satu Sabali was drafted by them did I know that.
How's she doing out there?
She's now, I believe, with the New York Liberty and Sabrina.
You know, they are not the greatest Wings franchise of all time.
No, that would be the Detroit Red Wings.
No, that's the Red Wings.
Yeah. The sitcom Wings?
Just Wings.
That is a good show. I like that.
The old MISL soccer club in Wichita, Kansas.
They were the Wings?
The Wichita Wings. Mm. And man, did we have fun going to their games.
All right.
Just wanted to point that out.
I like it. Anybody else? You're not going to give us the rest of the picks?
No.
Number 4.
Do you know any of the rest of the picks?
Well, they're on my screen here, but I'm not going to give them to you. Pelicans fire general manager David Griffin. They are saying Joe Dumars likely to take over in New Orleans.
Yeah. New Orleans, by the way, they were supposed to be a good team this year. They kind of pulled the 76ers, and then they all kind of went to hell. Watch them get, like, the #1 pick, and then everyone get healthy, and they'll be good again. Right until Zion eats his way out of the league. In theory, when you look at the roster on paper, it's a good roster.
Yeah, I mean, it's good players.
Yeah.
I mean, Would you rather have the Pelicans roster or the Blazers roster?
Oh, God. Well, I would rather have the Pelicans roster. But if you wanted to say, like, young upside.
How dare you disrespect Denny like that?
It's kind of neat.
Number 3.
Saints quarterback Derek Carr has a shoulder injury that could put his status for the 2025 season in jeopardy, according to multiple reports.
Yeah. Well, it's good. At this point, just hit the reset button. New Orleans has tried to string this thing along and wallowed in mediocrity because they play in a crappy division. Hit reset, find a quarterback, move on. And, you know, Shedeur Sanders is one of these guys that, dude, there's some people that think he could fall out of the first round. Other people think the Giants at 3. Apparently, they're having another workout with him. But New Orleans sitting there at 9, keep an eye on that. If they do decide that the Derek Carr thing, it's run its course, they're not going anywhere with it, and Sanders does fall, New Orleans is a landing spot at 9 that could happen.
Could we have seen the last of Derek Carr?
I mean,
he's not young.
No. Look, I think Derek Carr is on the precipice of no longer being a starting quarterback.
He's 34.
I think Derek Carr is on the precipice of being a bridge quarterback. He is no longer, I think, a viable starting quarterback in the league.
Number 2.
Like the Cleveland Browns this year, that's the sort of place that he ends up. On a 2-year deal somewhere, and it's like, we don't have anyone, we don't have the path to get anyone. Give me Derek Carr.
Well, the Suns have fired Mike Budenholzer, their coach. He's out.
Well, that whole thing, you know. Give him credit. Ishbia came in, and, dude, that guy took a big old swinge, and It went into the side of the mountain, and now, unfortunately, I don't know where they go. They got to get a new coach. You're going to move Kevin Durant. What do you get for him? You gave up so much to get him. That thing is a mess. Enjoy Yusuf Nurkic and Bradley Beal, who has a no-trade clause.
So it'd be the third coaching move for them in 3 years.
Yeah, it's that thing is a mess.
There is talk that the coach in New Orleans is the front runner to take over in Phoenix. It's just like musical chairs as coaches.
I'll tell you this. If you ask me who would I rather have the future of Phoenix or Portland, I'll take Portland. At least Portland, I don't think, has backed themselves into a corner.
Yeah, but I'm gonna bet on that owner before I'll bet on Jode.
Well, I know, but
Jode the Chode.
I'm just saying right now, if you gave me the next 5 years, you give me Phoenix, you give me Portland, I will take Portland over Phoenix.
Number one.
I can't get behind that. And number one, Jace.
Who does number one?
Chauncey Billups.
Hey!
Yesterday, they announced that he is back with the Zers. Multi-year extension. They thought maybe he was going to Denver to go home, or maybe Phoenix.
Well, it was just weird, because normally when you announce a decision for a GM, it usually goes with the coach. They didn't, so there was some talk that maybe just wasn't going to work and that Chauncey didn't want to be here. But I guess behind the scenes, it sounds like they've been talking for a little bit. And that second half of the season, like a month or two ago, this was not in the cards. But if you listen to the press conference, it sounds like that second half run changed everyone's mind. And I guess here comes Chauncey. So playoffs? The tank is over. They ain't doing that anymore, which I don't really understand, but okay.
Let's talk about it. I know you have some hot thoughts. You want to play a couple clips?
Yeah, there was just a couple things. I understand why they extended Cronin and why they extended Chauncey, and I don't have a problem necessarily with either one. I get it. I don't have to agree with you, but you sell me on your vision and there's a plan. I understand. But there was two things that I heard in the press conference that really, if I'm a Blazer fan, I find problematic, that give me more dread than hope about a decent kind of young group that you got here.
We'll get to that next. It is the Hot 5 at 5, that is brought to you by Victor Rico's Mexican Food, 19 locations across Oregon and Washington. Now in Lacamas Square in Vancouver, find a location near you at victorricos.com. When you think of flavor, think of Victor Rico's. We'll be right back on The Fan.
I told you, you dumb bitch! I wish it was that.
Bye, bitch.
I told you, you dumb bitch!
Waste some up, you little bitch! Let's go! Buckley told me during the break, he's like, dude, you have no idea how much work I'm doing over here to keep all of the bitch drops together. There are so many of them.
It's tough.
Yeoman's work over there.
Yeah, it is.
Well, the Blazers have kept their coach. I don't know how people feel about it. I know a lot of people didn't like Chauncey for a couple of years, right?
No, it's actually pretty neat.
I mean, look, this is a very informal thing. I just, when they extended Cronin and when they extended to Chauncey, I just, you know, did one of those Twitter, like, hey, how you feeling? And, you know, you get 50 Blazer fans that react to it. So it's not like this is any sort of scientific poll, but it definitely seems more negative than positive.
They don't like Chauncey?
I just think that...
And why is that?
I just think, in general, the fan base feels that this is a little bit of rinse and repeat. And I think the fan base wants to be more aggressive. I think the fans think they're... The old notion of the Blazers for years and years was just run it back and we'll be fine. Run it back. And, you know, the Al Farouq Aminus and not having to really do anything. And it kind of feels like they're telling you, oh, this is a good young group. And as long as we keep everything together, we'll grow into a contender. And I think fans have, you know, whether that's fair or not, I think fans are frustrated at, give us time, we're going to run it back, and this will grow into something.
But the coach isn't going to matter much until you get better players. Like, in other words, like, what do you want? Freaking Phil Jackson coaching this group? Guess what? Well, they still win 36 games.
I think with Malone out there, and I think with Jenkins out there, I think there was the idea that maybe you should go look at one of those. But I think from the Blazers' perspective, the players like Chauncey. We saw a lot of growth and development. And I think it's hard to bring back Cronin and then say that Billups, who kind of took chicken ass and made... not really chicken soup out of it, but maybe a nice broth.
It's chicken.
Chicken salad?
Yeah, chicken salad. No one really likes chicken salad. Yeah, but this one has raisins in it, so it's not that good, but it's all right.
Too much celery.
Yeah, but, you know, if you're going to bring back Cronin, I think it was hard, maybe. That, and I honestly believe, and you'll hear in this clip, look, we found out today, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that one person is in charge of this thing, and it's that effing Bert Cold. And this is what I talked about, one of the clips from the press conference, about 25 minutes. the freaking Burt Cold thing again. You forget about it because he's behind the scenes. And so you want to believe that someone has their head out of their ass and is making decisions. And no, we find out that that jackwad is still the one in charge of everything.
Yeah, Jody gets a lot of the blame. Like, I always direct my ire at Jody.
And
but
it's not.
Maybe I should start directing it at Burt.
And the one thing we know is that they just take the path of least resistance. And when they won the 10 of 11 games and the Moda Center started filling up again and you could sell people on this is the future and this was the easy and cheap path out, dude, that guy behind the scenes is going to sit there and continue to do the same thing that he always does, which is rinse and repeat. And that's the problem that I have. And at the end of the day, regardless of what you think of the GM, the coach, every week, do you have the clip, Buck? Look, we're doing weekly powwows now with Burt.
Burt's great. We spend a lot of time. When I say we, we do a thing which I think is really unique and very positive for, you know, what we're doing here. We call it a sync up, where it's myself, Chauncey, Dwayne, and Burt. Cool. Once a week, it's a big download on what's going on in our worlds that week. You know, what are we working on? What do we need help with? What's going well? What isn't? And Burt plays a great role in that, where he's moderator. He's asking us questions. He's helping us think in different ways. He's providing insight, you know, his decades of experience. So, you know, that's a microcosm of the role Burt plays overall, where he's active. He cares about this team. He cares about us. He wants to see us all succeed, and he's challenging us. Hey, have you thought about this? Hey, we need to do this better. You know, and it could be, you know, the topics are wide ranging, of course, big stuff like roster decisions. There's input there and there's collaboration. Hey, have you thought about this? You know, what about, what's this team saying? You know, there's definite, you know, back and forth with myself and Chauncey and him, and good positive feedback.
Yeah, dude, Burt's the owner.
Mm.
You can be mad at Jody all you want. Dude, Jody Allen is not involved. She just isn't. It's Burt Cold. And I'm sorry, decades of experience. The only thing you have decades experience of is being the best friend of a billionaire. And somehow you managed to weasel your way in and be a pain in the ass in this organization for 20 years. And now you're completely unchecked. The fact that we're having weekly check-ins now, sync-ups,
well,
there's a reason why it's unique, because no one does it.
Can I... Wait, no one does what? Weekly.
A weekly sync-up with Burt Cole.
If I'm being fair, I think synergy amongst those four would be a good thing. But it's just that Burt doesn't really have particular knowledge or particular passion or really much of any skill set needed to be the... You know what I mean? Like, it'd be one thing if that's somebody who could bring something to the table, but yeah. Joe Cronin said it. He's like, well, he's just the moderator, and he makes you think.
What would you say you do here?
You know,
thank you.
So now I think we see why Joe Cronin retained his job, because he clearly cups Burt's ball sack.
I think there's a lot of that, yes.
I mean, that was a little thick there.
That was the problem that I have with this. Like I said, I don't have a problem. I get it. I get why you bring back the Denny trade and the Kamara trade saved his job. And I get it. You got some synergy here, and your team overperformed, and you're playing hard for your coach. I get bringing it back. But problem one for me is that we found out that Burt is running this team. It is not Jody Allen. This is squarely in the camp of your owner is Burt Cold. Oh, my God. And then the second part that I have the biggest problem with is we had the GM and the coach basically say that you don't need to go find a marquee player. The marquee player and the future of your team is already here. And oh my God, I find that beyond frustrating and quite frankly terrifying.
Well, dealer's choice, you want Cronin or Chauncey first?
Take your pick.
This year I felt like we got a ton of data. What's working, what isn't? What skill sets do we need to add? What types of personalities do we need to add? We learned a lot about our roster this year. Do we have all the answers yet? No. Are we still learning? Yes. I mean, still the second youngest team in the league, still have a lot to learn about and see from our young players and how these veterans fit in with them. So the approach, though, I think we can definitely be more diligent about the specific type of player that we're adding. And I love that we're at that stage where, as a front office, we don't feel that pressure to keep taking swing after swing to try and hit on the next up-and-coming guy. I think we're starting to feel really comfortable with our talent base that we can be more diligent about adding specific types of guys.
What? Mm-hmm. You're at the plate. What do you mean you're at the place?
That's uninspiring.
What place?
Well, it's terrifying.
What place are you talking about? Well, the place of not making the playoffs?
Well, they think that they're going to turn into the Rockets. They have used that comparison many times, and I that's a giant stretch to me. I don't see what they see, but then again, I didn't watch them much this year at all. I've seen them play. I've seen Chauncey coach. I know people. It's a small town, right? You hear things. Yeah. I feel like that's really what they have to sell. And I think people with their eyes open aren't buying any of that as a legitimate selling point. They don't have anything to sell.
And Chauncey said the same thing. Chauncey reiterated.
He thinks they're going to be the Rockets.
And he thinks that the talent they have, I would like to point out that the two of your three key guys that you relied on didn't even start this year. Midway through the year, they both got benched. That shocks me. And this year seemed so crazy to me that you went through this tank, and then this year you decided in a deep draft that you don't need to tank. And we're finding out that you don't need to tank anymore because the roster you have is just good enough. So we're now saying that, like, we don't need to get rid of Simons. Simons and Scoot coexist, and Sharp turns into Kobe, and Denny's the next great all-star here, and Donovan Klingon can play more than 20 minutes. That's the part. I understand the vision, and I understand Chance, and I understand Cronin, and I see the path forward. I do. But, boy, the Bert Cole thing, and then hearing from coach and GM that you can now go just find some role players, some specific guys to fill in roles and let this thing cook. And that I don't get.
Well, the natives were getting restless, and this keeps them at the gate. I guess. I think one thing about that is, to help you understand it, I think maybe is that Chauncey, remember, when you're the coach and you're guiding young players, you get invested in those kids and those players. And I think Chauncey really likes them, and that clouds how he may view their potential.
Yeah.
That's probably a fair thing.
I think that's a fair thing.
Right. And so then,
cause you see the growth and development, and you can fool yourself into thinking that it's going to grow.
That's right.
And we saw that so many times, and it's why they didn't do anything. They just kept telling us grow and develop. But at least when you were telling us grow and develop, you had LaMarcus, who was the star. You had Damian, was the star. So now you're telling me that the future of this team rests on Denny going from, a nice solid player to a surefire all-star, and that Scoot and Shaedon Sharpe both become stars.
Well, and then I think you had a pretty solid second half of the season
against a lot of crap teams.
That's right. I mean, look, you don't have to sell me on that. But they did point out that they were like what, third in defense in the second half of the season.
They played hard for him,
which is way too small a sample size. But it's all they have to sell.
Yeah.
So they have to sell something, right?
Yeah.
That's really it. And so if anybody with a brain buys that, I don't know what to tell you. If you have your eyes open, I think everyone's on the same page, unless you're just biased. And it is that this is just a very mediocre roster that will get a little better, but it's not.
And I guess
it's not going anywhere. They don't have great players.
And that's my point. Let's say you have another 7 to 8 game improvement. Congratulations on being the Sacramento Kings.
If they have an 8 game improvement, how many wins is that?
44.
Yeah. Okay.
You're the Sacramento Kings.
Exactly.
You're the 9 seed.
And that's with a pretty damn good improvement next year. So, and I think we all see that's not happening. So, look, man, at this point, it's on you. You keep watching. You keep paying your money. You keep hope alive. I don't know if that makes you feel better.
Hey, and I'll be the first one to say,
they're just a bad franchise.
In the next year or two, if you turn into the Houston Rockets and you win 50 games and you're the 2 seed, I will be the first one to say completely wrong. Completely wrong, and congratulations. But when I look up and down the NBA at teams that are real contenders, it is not a collection of decent guys
exactly
that are solid players.
Can I also
you need
say,
difference makers and...
We have not. They don't have any difference. Can we also say we haven't seen, like, this is a nice season for Houston.
Yeah,
but that,
no one believes in them.
That's in their. They're in their infancy. This may be the best season they'll have.
You know who?
And they come regressing back.
You know who the
mean.
Houston Rockets are this year? The last couple years, I give you the Memphis Grizzlies, and the Memphis Grizzlies were a 2 seed, but at least the Memphis Grizzlies had Ja Morant, and now you look at Memphis and they fired their coach. They have a bunch of injuries, and Ja Morant may be on his way out of town. So I don't know. I just, we see it from two different perspectives. Danny today was talking about, he thinks that he's hearing that maybe the new NBA is not about having one or two stars. It's about a collection of guys, and the Houston Rockets or the new CBA may be the way it's built. And if that's the case, then again, maybe I'm wrong. But history has told me, and I'm not an NBA savant, I don't watch the league up and down. There's plenty of people that understand the game a million times better than me. But when I look through the league, and I see teams that are difference makers and teams that contend and win titles, they have difference makers. And so maybe you want to be the outlier, but I say this like the NFL draft. If you're going to pick a left tackle, right, the left tackle should have long arms and have certain metrics. If you're drafting a corner, he needs to have certain metrics. Otherwise, you're betting on your team being the one outlier that changes the rules to everything. And I hate betting on the outlier. And it feels to me that the Blazers are saying we are going to be the outlier of outliers. And that drives me crazy.
Yeah. The league really isn't that hard to understand, is it? I mean, come on. It's simple. It's about star players.
Feels that way to me.
Blazers traded theirs and now they have none. And they're trying to sell you what they can,
which is solid group that plays really hard and they play good defense.
And again, like I said, if you buy that, okay, good, you know, enjoy it, but it's not going to be worth watching for quite some time. It doesn't seem like. I do think, circling all the way back to Chauncey, I do think the one guy who I would hold on to in this organization is him.
Yeah.
I think he is a good coach.
He gets guys to play hard.
It's just, you know, he's only going to be able to take him so far.
Yeah.
But if he's all in about staying here, I think they've dodged a bullet by, you know, because they peed in his pot by not re-upping him during the offseason.
Yep.
And so you almost lost him too.
Yep.
But luckily, that's like the one good thing that happened. This is just my opinion, but I think the one good thing that's happened is you were able to keep him. Because the players, the young players do like him.
Yep.
And that's a good thing. You have to have buy-in.
And he got Scoot and Shaden to pull their head out of their asses a couple times this year. And you need that because those two guys under this plan, Your future basically rests on what Denny becomes. Kamara, you know what he's going to be. That dude is a rock solid defensive guy in the game. Offensive game will get a little better, but your whole team is predicated around how good does Denny become, and can Shaden and Scoot go from potential to solid upper tier starters?
That's
your whole team, and now it's can Chauncey find it?
Good luck. So Chauncey's back, multi-year extension. Coming up next, I think we go back to the Masters.
Hello, friends.
Did you watch that?
It was great.
Did you watch that?
It might be the best Masters I've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, I can't think of another one.
It was everything I could want.
And as you said, Suk, maybe the best golf tournament I've ever seen.
Recency bias, but
I
that
know
thing,
all that, but I can't remember another that I was that gripped the entire final round.
It was drunk. That whole final round was drunk.
Here's back.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, if you get one guy that goes wire to wire and there's no drama, I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, but I think that this is why I always say sometimes golf courses make, they create the drama.
They set up a situation.
And that golf course really does does help create drama because it is just so tricky. So you could be up by five shots as, well, Rory wasn't up five, but you know what I mean. Like, you could be smooth sailing.
We've seen dudes have meltdowns there.
One or two missteps there, hit the wrong part of the green, or you know, get in the wrong spots. You are in a lot of trouble, and you can double bogey easily. I mean, Rory McIlroy won the tournament, and he had four double bogeys.
Two on the last day, right?
So I do think that it's not all courses are created equal, obviously, and sometimes they go to major tournament courses where the course doesn't lend itself. The PGA Championship last year was a great example of this. I think that was the one in Tulsa, Southern Hills. Xander Schauffele won, and it was not that dramatic because most of those guys all hit it to the same spots.
Yeah.
And so then it just becomes a putting contest. It wasn't that creative, wasn't that interesting. Augusta National just brings out such wild stuff, and it's never been more on display than that final round.
And it's cool because it's the only major that's played at the same course every year. But that course, like you said, there's certain guys that it sets up well for, and there's different ways that you can go about trying to tame that thing. And I'm with you. It does lead to a lot of iconic moments and even
iconic shots.
Iconic shots, yes.
Rory had at least four of them. I can think of three.
And it ended up being, it won't be remembered because it didn't win him the tournament, but dude, when it was tied, when Rose got up on him, then Rose came back and they were both at 10 and Rory's at 15 and he hit to his 207 out from behind some trees. And that son of a gun cooked one, bent in the corner and knocked it within like 8 feet for an eagle. And you're like, all right, there's the tournament. Yep. And then he missed the putt.
Yep.
And you're like, and he still went up by one, but you're like, that was the chance to strangle it. Had he sunk that eagle and then just gone on, that shot would have been framed forever. And then he had like two more shots like that to set up the win, I think on 17 and 18. And then he missed both of those.
Well, not on 18, well, but not on 18. 17.
On 17.
But you're right. The shot on 15, that was the iconic shot.
Yeah.
If he had made the eagle and gone on to win the tournament in regulation, that was the shot. But that was the one.
Yeah, but even on 18, right, he goes in the bunker and you're like, oh, he's got to be careful. And he hits a phenomenal bunker shot and you're like, well, there it is. Sets up the winning putt. And then he misses the putt. And you're like, you got to be kidding me.
Dude, those guys, from where he was off his drive, those guys, like, just most of the time when guys that good need a par to win, you hit the fairway, dude, you're going to hit the green. Just hit the green and two putt. Yeah. Like, that one isn't talked about as much because he had so many others, like the one on 13 or the double bogey at one or a couple of missed putts. Yeah. That was really bad that he put that in the bunker from where he was.
Just put it in the middle of the green and then two putt your way.
Well, he did it the second time.
Yeah.
So it's like, and he even said, it's like, he said afterwards, he was like, yeah, I knew I had about 2 yards less and I knew if I hit it, I would just be right where the hill is and come back off the hill. Well, why didn't you do that the first time, you idiot?
When he missed that putt and Rose was over there, I also thought it was cool. Like, I just thought the coverage was really well done, with the exception of Jim Nantz being a little heavy handed, but I love watching that. I thought there was a really cool moment. Rory's on 18, right? And all he needs is a par, and he wins. And they show Justin Rose, and he was at the range. There was like three people watching him. There was no one, no other player there, three people in the stands. And I thought to myself, dude, how cool is it if you're just one of the three people there watching that? And then you hear the crowd groan and they showed Rose like realizing what had happened and then walking over and getting in the cart. And I thought to myself, well, that dude's about to become the Masters champ because there's no way Rory is coming back. And then Rose sticks it on 18, the first playoff hole. And then Rory proceeds to one better him and stick it like 3 feet closer. That tournament was drunk and had just the number of times you were like, I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, the only thing that would have been better is if it were Bryson in the playoff.
Yeah, because Rose isn't a villain. Rose was actually someone that you wanted to see. It's just in that moment, everyone was rooting for Rory. Had that been the doucher or even Scheffler, right? Like, I was talking to
Oberg.
I was talking to a buddy of mine. He said, we've never seen Scheffler and Rory go head to head. And you know, that would have been really cool.
I thought we were going to get that a little bit yesterday, but Scheffler didn't really rise up. At any rate, back to Jim, just for a second, may I?
I know where you're going.
He's an icon, but when...
He paints with a thick brush.
Dude, it's a little much. Yeah, I mean,
it is.
I'm trying to think of the way to articulate how I feel about it. There was so much drama in that golf tournament and so many ups and downs and twists and turns. We didn't need the Jim Nance over the top commentary on it. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, but you got it.
Like, the drama speaks for itself. He needed to dial back and trying to add to it with some of his stupid comments about
well, the post
Immelman fed into it a little bit too, where these guys, they kind of kept talking, alluding to Rory choking. And dude, the guy's just, he's an all world player who's just trying to win a golf tournament. Yes, he hit some bad shots, but he also hit some amazing shots.
Yep.
So how do you explain that? Like, I don't know. It just, they kind of tried to make a narrative that I think a lot of people were thinking, but I'm not sure was really at play in that tournament. It was just, let the damn tournament speak for itself, Jim.
Well, Nance loves creating the, every moment is the greatest moment, and it all means something greater than we can fathom. But, and I think this is where you were going, Buck.
Well, yeah, you brought it up earlier.
Yeah. When it was over and Rory won, I think, I don't remember if it was Dirt and Sprague, if it was Danny and Dusty said it. I think in a 7-minute stretch together, they said 46 words.
Yep.
And there was almost a 5-minute stretch where no one said anything.
Just all natural sound from the course.
And one of the things I love about major championships in golf is that when you win, as much as I love watching, you know, in baseball, we dogpile, right? NFL, everyone storms the field. Hockey, the Stanley Cup is my favorite thing in all of sports. But there is no celebration quite like winning at the Masters, because you get to see with no commentary, they just shut up and let it happen. You got to see Rory sob. You got to see Rory hugging his wife, his daughter. You got to see every one of Rory's family, friends. You know, that was an amazing thing to just watch that unfold. And I loved, absolutely loved that Immelman and Nance stepped away and just let the moment speak for itself.
And it feels like you could have had a little bit more of that lean going into the final moment. I know you're reacting to him winning and all that, but to Isaac's point, everyone knows what the narrative is. Everyone knows what the story is. So just dial it back a little bit and let those things speak for themselves.
Well, Nance is not subtle. From the NCAA tournament to this, that dude carries a heavy hand. But look, he's the sound of the Masters. I can't imagine the Masters without him.
Like I said, he's an icon, but he is an eye roll to me a lot.
It's a lot. Even in Butler Cabin, I think at times it's like just
Rory.
Your parents. I knew it. I'm like, geez,
they
man.
Didn't die.
He was trying to pull a Rory Firestone. Hey, let's see if we can get him to cry. And then when Rory did start to tear up, I just imagine Nance in the corner, just that evil smile, like, you dumb bitch, I got you.
Did you think that Scotty ducked out.
Oh, he wanted nothing to do with
it. Dude, he went deuces real fast after putting that green jacket on Rory.
He's got to go win the plaid jacket at the RBC.
It was weird because he didn't say a word, right? He was just there. And then after 5 minutes of watching Nance stroke everybody, he turns to Scotty. Scotty puts the jacket on him. And the moment the jacket goes on him,
he's out.
Dude, he pulls a Morgan Whalen and is like, give me to God's country. I'm out. Boom.
Yeah, I don't think he meant it that way, but it seemed a little.
We all said the same.
It looked that way.
Yeah.
But then he put the green jacket on him again at the ceremony out on the green.
Yeah.
And he was much nice. He gave Roy a hug.
Maybe he had to take a squirt. Maybe he had been holding it for a while and was like, get me out of here.
But that sure seemed like, I want no part of this. Well, I had to squirt.
Can we also talk about the fact that I was convinced that Roy was just nerve eating and drinking? My God, Rory. He's hydrated,
like just too anxious.
He kind of always eats on the course, though.
Boy,
he always has a little bar.
Dude, that dude was eating and drinking everything. He carried that damn. Whoever made that hydro fast made a bunch of money.
But like, you're to the point about the eating, though. Like, he just finished 18 and he's going to the playoff, and he's like, "I'll have a granola bar." And I'm like, "That'd be the furthest thing from my mind. My stomach would be eating itself."
No way. Roy had to stay hydrated the entire time.
I think he wants to keep his energy level up. He doesn't know how many holes that's going to go.
I'll tell you what. You know who had championship pee? Rory, I bet that was crystal clear at the end of that round.
I bet he didn't go in Ray's Creek either.
I wanted that to be Coors Light. what's in the flask? A couple silver bullets in there. What's your key? Got some Tullamore Dew in there. He's an Irishman. Whoa. Sorry, the Twins guy just threw behind the Mets batter's head.
I wonder if he'd play better if he were drunk.
I don't think that's the case.
No. Old Darren Clark was always drunk out there. You remember him?
Yeah.
He won a major.
Well, I just don't think that's
drunk as a skunk.
I think that's probably the best plan, but John Daly.
Well, I love Rory. He's resilient. He's human. He's not perfect.
No.
He's no Tiger.
No.
He can make it a little rough on himself sometimes, he admits that.
And you had people that were like, well, what about your wife? We get into the personal life.
Dude has been through so much. Like, the game of golf is a freaking mind F.
Yeah. It's a fickle mistress.
It really is. And it has really done a number, or at least should have really done a number on Rory at the highest level. And yet he overcame all of that and himself to win the career slam. I could not have been any happier. And I will admit.
Yeah, you got a little.
When he dropped to his knees after making that putt, I welled up.
Yeah, I get it.
That was so cool.
It was. That was a.
And he's a good dude.
Not according to some.
He's a good dude. And his Poppy needs to, like, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with Poppy.
I think she's got some sensory issues.
Does she?
Well, she.
Because she doesn't react to anything.
Well, and that, it looked like she was almost scared or nervous after the whole par 3 contest putt that went viral. Like, everyone was whooping and hollering. She's like, And I think that yesterday was another one of those where she's just not comfortable maybe with the crowds or whatever.
Sure.
All right. Well.
It was cool.
It was. Now, somebody went and played Augusta National today. Did you see this?
Well, is it a celebrity? Because I saw earlier that someone was going to go play it.
Yes.
A football guy.
Yeah.
Same guy.
He went and played, and I don't know about his score.
Oh, okay.
We're going to.
Because he set the over-under, and it was very high.
He's
not a very good golfer.
Much lower than that, which is
concern. I got to call. Well, we'll talk about it coming up next.
We'll chat.
We'll wrap up the hour with that when we return on The Fan. And Buck and I were talking about this during the break, but a lot of golf courses and tournament courses will have, you know, clients or sponsors or VIPs or members or media or whatever play the golf course the day after a tournament so you can play it as the pros played it.
Yeah.
I know some people got to do that at Chambers Bay when they were here. And it's a common thing, and they do it at Augusta National, apparently. You would think they wouldn't, but they do. Mm-hmm. And J.J. Watt, former NFL star with CBS Sports Now, and that's probably his
connection
there, he got to play it today.
Yeah.
And I can't find an accurate handicap for him, but there are people who are saying that he is a 25 handicap.
Okay. So he said, I didn't know he actually got to do it, but about a week ago, He said that it was his first time going to Augusta with CBS, and he said that he was going to get to play the Masters Monday afterwards. And he said that he set the over-under at 152.5.
Yeah.
And people were making fun of him, and he was like, dude, whatever. He basically said, I'm not a good golfer, and do you know what those greens are like? So, I mean, he was being pretty honest. So about 25, I mean, that's, you know, that's not a good golfer.
Right. And I think we all are fearful of what we would shoot if we played it the way the pros play it.
Yes.
Because I told you this last year, we got into Berkman's place, luckily got into Berkman's place. And in Berkman's place is this very private, exclusive area off of the 16th tee.
Peyton Manning was the doorman.
Peyton Manning was greeting people at the door with his green jacket.
Like, what?
My new buddy.
What?
And one of the things you do when you go in there, and this is, they have this, I don't think they have this anywhere else on the property.
Or in the world.
Is they have, well, I have a buddy, my ticket broker buddy told me this is the best sports experience in sports.
And that guy has access to most
for everything.
Sports,
he said the only thing that really rivals is like Kentucky Derby. Yeah. So when you go back in there, one of the first things you can do is they will hand you a Scotty Cameron $500 putter and a couple of Masters logoed Pro V1s.
Yeah.
And you can play a putt on three replica greens. I can't remember which holes they are, but they're just like they're made exactly like three of the holes out on the course.
Sure.
The real caddies from Augusta National Golf Club are there in their white bibs, and you walk up there and you get to putt. And I just remember the caddy saying, "Where are you?" So the first hole pops up, the hole's down way over down to my left, and he says to me, he goes, "Where are you going to putt this?" And I'm like, "Oh, well, I'll cut off. I mean, it looks like it's pretty hilly.
Sure.
So I'll cut it right about here." He's like, "Yeah." He walks like 20 feet to the right.
Says, "There you go."
He's like, "I want you to hit it three quarters right here." And I did, and the ball just goes all the way around the slope.
And you would not have known that.
No chance, dude. Yeah. And so they run them at the same stemp and the same speed as the players play them. That's the fun of it. So having done just that little exercise, I think everyone fears what they would shoot if they went there. It is just another level how they it's so tricky there. So he's a 25 handicap.
Yes.
He puts the over-under on 152. Do you care to guess what he shot today? He played it today. Now, here's the key thing.
Okay.
They did not play the Masters tees. They played the members tees. So the Masters, Augusta National, when the big boys play it,
it's one
of the longest courses that they play.
Do we know what the member
tees? The member tee is at about 6,380 yards. So way shorter. That's like how that's what you and I would play if we went.
Are we talking like 50, 60 yards per hole shorter? Like, what's the rough difference you think that would be on an average tee shot for par 4?
I'm looking it up here.
I've got the scorecard.
Well, I think he was saying it's about, I'm looking at, he says 1,300 yards shorter than, so over 18 holes, 1,300 yards.
It's like 80 yards a hole.
So like 13's the par 5, right? Hello?
Yes.
Okay. 510 yards for the Masters player from the Masters tees.
Yeah.
455 yards.
So
for
it
members.
Is a huge difference.
That's
and I'm guessing angles and everything it changes.
Changes a lot.
Changes a lot.
Masters tee on 15 is 530 yards.
Yeah.
For the members, it's 475 yards.
Okay.
16 is 145 yard shot.
Yeah.
For members tee. So it's a big difference.
It's a big difference.
So what do you think?
So he was
JJ Watt
152,
shot.
But you seemed skeptical at this score, so it's going to be better than that. I will say that he's going to, if overall is 152, you're skeptical. I'll go like 120 to 125 if you're saying it's skeptical.
He says he shot a... Can you feel the suspense?
It's going to be way worse than this then.
He says he shot 103. He's a 25 handicap.
No, he didn't.
That's what he said. Well,
so he basically shot his handicap at Augusta National?
Basically, yeah. I mean, more or less.
More or less. I mean, 72 yeah. and 25. I mean,
yeah. He said he shot a 49 on the front, a 54 on the back, and 103. He said, We played from the members' tees, Sunday pins, so they kept the pins where they were. No. Ball in the hole, no gimmies, no free drops.
Wow.
He said, extremely pleased with that result. What an unbelievable experience and an unbelievable place.
Then he's a sandbagger.
Because
what incentive does he have to make up that number?
Right, I don't...
Like, why wouldn't you just say 113?
You're not a 25.
And I'm sure there are dudes that play with him that could testify to that.
And he already set the expectation, I'm going to suck, it's going to be 150.
Or have we overvalued what we would do on that course? Now, two things you got to remember. One, the members' tees, that's a big difference. And two, they probably didn't mow.
Yeah, but you're still, it's one day of mowing. Dude, there were times where you saw it, like false fronts. And I mean, no. You are like, and you're shooting, what do you say, 100 and whatever?
He said 103.
Dude, I need to know how many putts he had, because that would be my, because I'm like a 16. So if I'm playing Augusta National, I probably don't hit driver the entire time. I'm probably teeing off with a 6-iron, and I don't know if I hit anything bigger than a 6. My whole thing would be,
keep it straight.
We're hitting it 200 down. We're going to try to stay 200 down the middle, and then we're just trying to play the middle of the greens and 3-putt everything and try to break 100. You're at 25. And I
will say this too about that course. There's no rough to speak of, and you can kind of hit it a lot of places because
you got to shape shots. You're not doing that at a 25.
Well, it's pretty big. It's a pretty big property in a sense that you've got a lot of room to miss.
Hmm.
And now that's going to set you up for a tougher second shot or third shot, whatever, because of the angle or whatever. But it's not like it's so narrow or tight. It's pretty wide open and there's no rough. So that helps a guy like him. Immensely. I just think on the greens.
Maybe he had the day of his life. I don't know.
With no gimmies and...
Or maybe that 25 handicap is off. He's...
Yeah.
I don't know. Hasn't updated it since he retired or something.
You and I have played with a lot of ex-athletes
He's great hand-eye coordination, but he doesn't play a lot, but...
They all are better than their swings look.
Yeah.
Like, they're just athletes, and they get the ball around, and I don't know, they kind of rise up.
But I'll tell you what, if I was playing at Augusta National and I shot 103, I would take that in a heartbeat. I've always thought that if I played that place, that's got 120 written all over it. I'd be terrified.
It depends on the condition, but I had a buddy that played it who's a good golfer.
Good golfer.
He shot 78 there.
Yeah.
But
he's a good golfer.
He is a very good golfer, but he's not like a scratch golfer. He's probably a 3 or 4. Well, but I mean, it's good, It's not as if he shoots in the 60s regularly. I'm just saying, like, when he played, and I remember him walking me through it after he played, he said it very much plays, because he didn't play it around the Masters.
Yeah.
He just got an invite. Through another deal.
Yeah.
And he just said it very much plays like a regular course.
Because
the greens aren't running nearly as fast as...
I just remember once, the only time I ever got to do anything like that, I got to play Edgewater the day after the LPGA, and... I remember playing that and being like, what in the hell? Like, I don't know what the LPGA runs at normal event versus what the Masters does, but I don't know. That was a real learning lesson for me. when I played on those greens, I can't tell you the number of times you're 20 yards out and you just hit a little bump and run, and then you just watch it go, gone.
Bye.
Yeah, and bye.
Bye,
and
bitch.
And then after like 4 holes, I'm like, I'm just going to putt. There is no more chipping.
I've
got straight away, I'm just putting. And it just, dude, it was maddening.
Yeah.
And that's at the Safeway, that's Edgewater. And just with those greens, the Masters, and maybe it's just me, but the Masters, I'm terrified of what the greens would do to me.
All right. Well, we're way over now. Mm. We just did a whole nother bonus seggy on
the
Masters.
The bonus. Well, JJ Watt giving us all hope that if you go play Augusta, which will never happen, you two can shoot 103?
103 is what he said.
Ooh.
All right. The club is next on The Fan.